Hello and welcome to episode 122 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON State Section Director for the state of Pennsylvania, City of Philadelphia. And today we are welcoming special guest, Chief Investigator for Nebraska MUFON, Tamara Steyer. Tamara's been with MUFON for over 4 years, working her way up as a field investigator, and is now Chief Investigator for the entire state of Nebraska. She's also been involved in the paranormal as an investigator for the Heartland Paranormal Research Group, which we'll talk about as well. She is also a Reiki master and experienced dowser. She's also had a couple of her own sightings as well. And one of the big things we're going to talk about in the second half of the episode is a top case that she's working on, which is really, really cool. It's kind of like a Skinwalker Ranch, but in her neck of the woods. So we'll get into the details about that and some of the things that have happened there. So we have a lot of really cool stuff to go over today. So as we always like to say, strap on them seatbelts. We're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 122 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON State Section Director for the state of Pennsylvania, City of Philadelphia. And today I'm sitting down with our special guest, Tamara Steyer. Tamara, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I've known you for some time, doing some good work over in your state with MUFON and the investigations that you're doing. So it's great to have you on today and be able to talk about that with you. So I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
So I guess let's kick it off. And how you got involved in the field? Was it an interest, a sighting, or some kind of an experience? How did it all start for you?
It was kind of just a general interest. I've always been, you know, interested in science fiction, things like that. Growing up, I think I've watched about everything under the sun, read lots of books. I never really felt like, you know, we were alone ever in the universe. So it's, you know, to me, that was never an issue. I do remember at one point, and I was in high school, it was my senior year, and I was trying to decide, you know, what I wanted to do, like with college and that. And I decided I was going to be a xenobiologist. And so I was determined that's what I was going to do until my science teacher basically told me, well, there is no xenobiology class. So there is no degree in that at that time. So it kind of put the damper on that. So, but I went on to get a bachelor's degree in science. So I've always had an interest in science in general.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's something where I actually got interested in like the paranormal part first. I actually had an incident where I was having like acid reflux all the time. And so my cousin did this healing things called like Reiki and that. So went to him, he was able to work with me on that. And just kind of one thing led to another, and I got interested in paranormal research. And at the time they were having the UNO paranormal group. At the same time they were having the MUFON meeting. So basically they would have the MUFON meeting first, and they would have the UNO paranormal group afterwards. So I attended a lot of the paranormal groups, and then I started getting interested more and more in UFOs and the different research that way. So I started attending both meetings. And then after a while, I decided to become a MUFON, you know, join MUFON and then become an investigator.
That's great. So was back then when you were, I guess, joining and investigating for both sides, I mean, was there a big difference between the paranormal, and was there any crossover at all at that time?
There was. It was really interesting because I do remember that the state director at the time, he would actually host both meetings, and he would always bring up good questions, you know, things like why do we use the same equipment to measure UFO sightings as we do paranormal sightings? You know, use a tri-field meter for both, you know, things like that. So there was definitely some like questions about crossover, and this was, I think I joined MUFON in 2019. So it would have been a few years before that, when I was just going to the meetings. But yeah, it seems to be a little bit, we would discuss it. So it was kind of interesting to have both groups back to back, and some people attended both and you would have discussions back and forth.
Okay. That's great. You said 2019, that's the same year I joined.
Oh, interesting.
How about that? Small world, right? How were the meetings back then? What kind of stuff were you guys going over? Can you talk a little bit about the paranormal ones and the MUFON ones?
Sure. Yeah. So the paranormal ones, we would have just a variety of different people attend. Sometimes, I mean, it was open to the public for both of them. And a lot of times in the paranormals, you would have different paranormal groups come and just talk about different topics. Sometimes we would have a speaker. Otherwise, we would just bring up, like, you know, investigations. You know, we went out and did investigations, and this is what we saw. There was some incredible footage I've seen. One of them was, this was actually in a warehouse, and the person who worked in the warehouse was had passed away, and they actually got a thermal imaging of someone very clearly humanoid shape, literally walking through shelves that would be impossible. And it was, you know, night imaging, so it was nighttime, so they really didn't see anything, they couldn't see anything, but the thermal imaging showed that. So you would have some really neat data, and, you know, and how to investigate, you know, how to use, how to evaluate EVPs. So you would learn a lot of different techniques. And same thing with MUFON. MUFON would be a little bit more structured. They would go over their cases, you know, that they've gone over, you know, that occurred, you know, and discuss different topics. I know Dave Paris is heavily into that QED, the space warp technologies he's developing. So he would talk about that sometimes.
What is that exactly?
So it basically, it is, he's creating in a lab in his garage, he is creating ways to basically replicate warp bubbles. And so he's developing that based off of science. I understand the science to a point, but basically they've created an engine that creates a tripolar field that creates a warp bubble around an object. Wow. It's similar to what you see, like where airplanes will all of a sudden hit like in an electrical storm, they'll see an open spot, and then they'll go through it, and then they'll travel hundreds of miles in a matter of seconds. He's been able to recreate that in the lab.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's like kind of reminds me of the Bermuda Triangle with some of the airplanes that kind of start from one point, and 20 minutes later, they're going into a completely different area that usually takes hundreds of miles, and it only took 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I actually got his start. He actually researched a couple of the cases regarding that, and then he started measuring the electrical fields around it. And he says that actually those cases are very, very common with pilots all around the world over the years. And he also mentioned there is some way to measure the level of that. This tripolar fields can be measured, you know, through satellites in space too. So he's just found a way to replicate it. Like I said, I understand the science to a point, but it's to me, that was also really fascinating to know that that's, you know, kind of the new and upcoming thing that, you know, maybe someday will be normal.
So is he actually doing like testing with this, like to see if mm-hmm. he can actually make it happen and replicate it?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. He's actually gotten lift, like basically movement. Again, it's at a very small level right now. And I forget, they have a YouTube video called QED. And they were previously called Space Warp, and they changed the name of the company to QED. But they've presented at aeronautical symposiums. They've written multiple papers. They've contacted NASA. You know, a variety of different of the, you know, the private space corporations. So they're really at this point, they have done it and proven that they have lift. They apply electricity to their engine, and then the engine creates a lift through this warp bubble. And they've been able to map out how the field, the magnetic field and gravitational fields work around the device as well. And they feel like it's being pulled through space is the current theory. So, I mean, it's, if you look at the videos and the website, I mean, it's really fascinating information. Yeah. It's very new. It's, you know, it needs a lot more research, but it's just really interesting. That's also what really got me interested in MUFON too, because I would hear those talks and, you know, I just wanted to hear more. And he did mention, at one point, like you can attach, this is where I think what really got me is you can attach like a device that would have like a warp bubble, and you could put it like around your fridge. So you attach a device to your fridge and be able to just move it around your house with your fingers. Really? You know, yeah. So there's all kinds of applications to it. He said that based on their current data, and I don't remember the numbers exactly for sure, but I know that they said their current data, if it's accurate, holds true when testing, you could travel to Mars in 45 days with, I don't know if it was like a dozen car batteries, because the amount of electrical, input needed gets less and less the longer it goes. So
that's incredible. It's like state of the art stuff right there.
It is. Yeah. So that's always been fascinating. When I used to travel for work, I was a CRA, and I would travel over the country, and I would take Uber a lot, and I would tell like all the Uber drivers all about it. So
that's really cool. And it makes me think of the UFO phenomenon too, because we talk about how do they get here from galaxies far, far away. Are they already using that technology to travel here to Earth and to other planets? So that's pretty, that's really, really cool. Has he gotten to that at all?
No, not to that yet. I mean, he's talked about it. It's more of just there just needs to be more research. I know he's looking for, you know, some funding to like basically, you know, basically build a larger lab with staff other than his garage. And so that's kind of the next stage is they've done a lot of testing. They're continuing to do it, but to get to like a bigger level,
right,
to test like a drone or, you know, something in flight, it just takes a little bit more time and effort.
Okay.
And he did actually, one of the meetings, he did talk about quantum drives, which I thought was really interesting. He had this idea of like how a quantum drive would work. And he said that he felt the quantum drives would explain how the ships supposedly appear and disappear. Because it would basically be like instantaneous travel. Because he's like the warp bubble works great and it will get us a lot of places. But as far as like going like to like another star system, that still would take a long time, much shorter than we have now. But if you had quantum drives and you started, you know, writing all the calculations on the board, and you know, it's still very, very theoretical, but the concept was that you would have this quantum engine of some kind. I don't know how that would work, but basically you would apply a frequency. So you would just need to know the frequency of where you were going and put that in somehow, and then you would instantly be there. So kind of like that, you know, the quantum entanglement, you would quantum entangle with that location.
Wow, that's really cool. So is that kind of like the theory behind, I guess, when we see UFOs and sometimes they just disappear, they're gone. they don't land, they're not like shooting to another area of the sky. They're just completely gone. Is that the theory behind that they're traveling the far distance and it's just instantaneous speed like that?
That's one of the theories. I've heard, you know, different theories of portals or, you know, bending space. I kind of like, you know, and I'm not well versed in all of this by any means, but I do kind of like the idea that it is a, you know, kind of a quantum jump of some kind, whether it is quantum entanglement. I think there could be probably multiple different types of, you know, engines and things like that based on, you know, the craft that we're seeing,
right.
but that I think that is definitely a possibility. You know, he had the basic equations for it. I mean, so it was interesting. Again, it's an interesting topic to go over, and
yeah,
it's all just one of the many possibilities, but it, to me, that it makes sense. So
absolutely, that's, I could talk about that kind of stuff all day long, you know what I mean, the possibilities.
Okay.
it's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess let's kind of move on to the next thing. You joined what's called the Heartland Paranormal Research Group. Could you tell us about that, how you got involved with it, and you're an investigator for it still as well, right?
Yep. And so when I was going to UNO Paranormal Group, we would actually go on investigation as a UNO Paranormal Group, but I met the different paranormal groups that would attend and got to know the people as part of Heartland Paranormal. So they asked if I would be interested in joining. Of course I was. And so we just started doing investigations on that. Since COVID, we have not been as active. And so it's something we kind of, I think there was a period of time where we were fairly active, and then with COVID, it kind of slowed down. And there was a little bit of activity, I think, in 2022. But at that time, the last 3 years, I've been very, very busy with work, but I've recently changed jobs. So that's changed that quite a bit. So I should have more time to do fun things like this. And so it's interesting to go on these different cases. And then, you know, one of the areas we went to, which was actually a very good investigation, is it's a veterans museum in Ottawa. And the person that runs the museum, he basically created this veterans museum. And he has basically the surveillance, the 24-hour surveillance cameras, because he's very interested in the paranormal too. So he has sent us some amazing footage where you can clearly see some shadow thing moving through the museum and going through objects.
Wow.
So we've done at least two or three investigations there. Had some interesting, you know, findings, nothing quite that dramatic. But it's been really interesting, you know, learning how the paranormal works and some of the footage that you've seen. We've investigated like the squirrel cage jail, things like that, and the local things around here that tend to have a little bit of activity. So
that Veterans Museum, what's the history of that location prior to him making it a museum? Do you guys know?
I'm not sure on that one. I know it doesn't seem to have anything else like around that would stand for, you know, stands out to me, but I'd have to ask him and see what it was before that. I know there's, in general, in Nebraska, and that's right across the river in Iowa, But there tends to be a lot, of course, a lot of Native American history, a lot of, history regarding, we really didn't have civil war here, but, areas where they, the military would come in with different campaigns with the Native Americans. So there's a lot of history that way around the area. So that's a possibility. So,
okay, that's interesting. Yeah, definitely Native American thing, and then the war's back to happen. So are there any major investigations that you guys have done that really stick out to you that you'd like to share with us?
For the paranormal?
Yeah.
That was probably one of them that does, just because of the footage that we've seen there. As far as like activity, I know we did an investigation of the Bellevue Cemetery. Bellevue, Nebraska tends to be very active paranormally. And that was one of those where it seemed, fairly calm and, nothing too much going on. But there was some instances where you could see, and I could see this with my actual eyes. And this first time I think I've probably seen anything like this was it looked like a shape of a person, crouched down behind a one of the headstones, but it was completely black, and then it would just like disappear. So that was interesting. So that one probably was the most. I mean, it didn't feel scary or anything, I guess, but that one was interesting. The other one was I've actually used a Kinect. So the Kinect system is based off the Xbox system, and it's a proprietary system that detects a humanoid.
Oh, okay. Yes, I know what you're talking about now. I was going to ask you what it was, but yes, I know the Kinect. Yes.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so it can only detect, it's supposed to only detect the human form. Because if you're playing a video game and you're using the motion sensors, you can't have like your cat walk by or your chair get in the way, or you could never play the game. So it is a proprietary system. And so what they started having is they would have people call and complain saying, well, it shows a person behind me and I can't play my game anymore.
Wow.
And so that's how it kind of turned into the paranormal. And so we've had some really interesting things where you will see a humanoid form that would appear and appear to move around. It's a little bit, it's not very smooth, the motions and that, but that's more just a system, not the thing in front of you. But it's been interesting that way. And I think that would also be something, like you said, how there's carryover between the different types of investigations. That's something I would like to bring into like a UFO type investigation. I haven't at this point, but that would be an option to, just to see what you get. But anymore, it's like, well, what is it? Is it, an alien, a UFO, a ghost, who knows?
Right. And that's another question I was going to ask you. Sometimes it can be hard to figure out if you're having a paranormal experience or if you're having contact experience with ET.
Correct.
Is there any way that you've kind of figured out how to deter or differentiate the two?
I think that is kind of the big challenge. I help out with the Nebraska Bigfoot Conference. I've done that for the last 3 years. And there is a group of investigators from Colorado that come out, and they're kind of in that same concept of, what is it? And they will use a similar discussions, whether it's, whether they're in a place that's haunted or there's paranormal activity or UFO activity or Bigfoot activity. So it kind of comes down to like, what is it? I think one of the discussion was if you saw like an orb and you were out in the woods and you could hear crashing in the woods, you'd think it was a Bigfoot. But if you had the same experience in your house, you may think it's, a ghost.
Right.
So it could be an ET at that point. You just don't know. So I think some of it is you have to use your own best judgment. I think that's one of the big questions right now as kind of the whole evolution occurs with paranormal as a large group, encompassing everything evolves. So I think that's one of the questions, as far as, what is it that we're observing? And I think that's one of the big mysteries right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I've come across some cases where it's like, it starts out as a Bigfoot case and people in the woods, having Bigfoot around them and hearing them and seeing them. And then all of a sudden a UFO appears above them and the Bigfoot disappear and go up into the craft. So it's really, it can be a big crossover and all connected together into one at some point, in some cases. Yep. So it's pretty cool that you get to see it from both sides. Not many people get to have that paranormal UFO thing. So you're also a Reiki master, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So when I had my acid reflux issues, I work in the pharmaceutical industry. I worked in pharmaceutical, basically early phase clinical research for about 27 years now. So I knew I just didn't want to just take, you know, antacids for the rest of my life. So my cousin that did the healing hands, he was a Reiki master. So I went to him for healing, and then I got interested in that. So then I became a Reiki master through him.
So can you kind of talk about like what a Reiki master is exactly? Because I'm not, I kind of get them confused between, you know, the tarot card readers, Reiki masters, and what the difference is.
Yeah. The difference is, so for Reiki is basically just, trying to explain it in a way that makes sense. It's kind of like, it's like a, like healing energy is the most basic way to say it. So Reiki is a very old technique originated in Japan. And it's basically just that the concept of, you know, universal God, however you want to, whatever you connect with, you know, energy flowing through you and healing, you know, if you have like a, someone that you're working on healing them, and that you just basically just heal them whatever the best way is for them. You're not involved in it. You're just a conduit for the healing energy. So it's just having energy go through you to this person, and there's healing. So like a tarot card reader, like, you know, I'm also experienced in dowsing, that's more on the intuitive side. So they're all just different tools to connect to universal source, unified source field, you know, guardian angel, spirit guides, whatever you connect to get answers. Pretty much you kind of already know, but to get the answers for questions that you're, you know, are looking for. And so it's very similar, you know, it's kind of more on that spiritual side, but the core is very, very similar. It's kind of the same thing with, you know, the paranormal part. It's all, everyone calls it different things. And I've learned over the years, they tend to put it in different buckets, but it's all the same thing. You know, it's just a different tool that you're using to help get your answers and find guidance.
That's cool. It's a good way to look at it. I never thought about it like that before. Pretty cool. So let's go ahead and take our break. And when we get back, we can kind of talk about, you're working on a really big case right now with MUFON and doing some great investigations up there. So I'd like to get into that a little bit. So let's go ahead and take this quick break, and we'll be back right after these messages. Okay. Hello, everybody. This is your host, Jesse P. I'm happy to announce coming up this year in 2024 on May 4th is the Curiosities Festival, which will include speakers in the field of ufology, paranormal, and Bigfoot. We'll also be having live performances throughout the day, live bands, food, activities, and more. Tickets will only be $5 a person, and it'll be from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. at night. Again, this is for the 2024 Curiosities Festival. You can get this information over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peek, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
This is your host, Jesse Peek. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable? Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network. All right, welcome back to episode 122. We're sitting down with our special guest, Tamaris Dare. So you've had some personal sightings and experiences yourself in the field, seeing UFOs or objects. Could you tell us a little bit about some of those experiences and sightings that you've had?
Sure, yeah. I think I didn't actually have my first sighting, at least that I can remember, until I think it was about 2015. I had actually decided, you know, if I was going to, you know, I wanted to see a UFO because I had never seen one.
Right.
And so I kind of spent some time, about a couple of weeks, just saying, I see UFOs all the time, it's no big deal. So I would just tell myself that all the time, I see UFOs all the time, it's no big deal. And we were, about a couple of weeks later, we were driving for my daughter's 10th birthday party with some friends. And we weren't far from our house. And my husband was driving and he said, there's something in the sky. So, you know, I look up and I see this kind of, almost looked like a cloud at first. It was white, like a light white color, but the sky was completely clear. It was in November in 2015. So it was completely clear. And at first it kind of looked like a cloud, but I was watching it and all of a sudden it would get really big and be like a square. And then it'd get really small and be like a triangle. And it would do that, would get really small and change shape. And then it would get really big and change shape into these geometric shapes. And my husband and I both sat there and watched it. And I wanted to take a picture with my camera, but it was so faint. You know, you could see it easily with the eyes, but like my husband was like, you're not going to get it with the picture.
Right.
So I just sat and watched it, you know, cause sometimes it's better just to watch than try to mess with technology. And so it did that for maybe 60 seconds. And we both saw it. And then all of a sudden it got really small and disappeared.
So do you think, did it land or just it was gone?
It was just gone. I mean, it seemed to be fairly high in the sky. Because it wasn't like nearby, it was kind of up in the sky, probably about maybe 75 degree, you know, off the horizon. It was up pretty high, but I mean, it was just amazing to see. My husband remembers it a little different than I do, because I remember the white, you know, that it was white in color and it would change shapes, but he remembers seeing triangles, like it was the craft or whatever it was covered in triangles that would flip as it would change size. I don't remember that myself, but.
So we hear that a lot too. When you have a whole bunch of people that have a sighting, everybody sees something a little different. Ain't that mm-hmm. strange? I wonder why that happens. You know,
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't see it very well, or sometimes there's that shock of it. So I was trying to do that. I see UFOs all the time to avoid the shock of it. Cause I think when you're shocked, you know, it's you kind of like, you don't know what to do and you know, you'll still remember it, but you might remember it differently. But yeah, it was interesting. It was my first sighting, so it was very exciting.
That's pretty cool, yeah. And to see an object that way that kind of transforms into different shapes, that's mm-hmm. that's been becoming a thing lately with people seeing things like and objects like that. I mean, some of the military talk about it as well. To see the different shapes like that in an object, just be able to make different kind of forms. I mean, that's mm-hmm. they talk about transmedium craft and things that are possible. Not even a craft, things that are maybe even alive. You know what I mean? It's pretty crazy.
It is. Yeah. I have no idea. I just know it was something that was definitely not explainable. And that was kind of what I wanted to see too. But yeah, I mean, it was just very clear that it was in the amount of change, the amount of size that it changed was significant considering how high up in the sky it was. I mean, it would just, and it would basically go like, it would be small and then it would get big about that quickly.
Huh. that's pretty cool. That's a good sighting to have for your first one, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any other sightings?
I've seen like a bright light. My husband and I watched a bright light go across the sky. And it went, you know, in a like a straight line. So, and I checked all the flight radar. This is when I was a MUFON investigator. So I checked all the flight radars, checked the ISS. Nothing was like that. So that one was interesting. No clue what that was. I don't think it was a meteor because of the path it took, but that one's a little hard to tell. Right. The other one was it was a full moon drumming ceremony. It had a huge group of people, had a big turnout, and they had a group of Native Americans doing like a drumming ceremony there, and it was really beautiful and just gorgeous fall day, full moon that night. And this was interesting because it was kind of chilly, and so we walked over to the bonfire, and then we were walking back, and it looked like there was a plane coming in. It was fairly low, like it was getting ready to land, but you know, you couldn't hear anything. And then all of a sudden it turned, like a right-hand turn, went right over our group. And the interesting thing was, you know, I look up and there were lights on it, but it didn't really appear to be a plane, but there was no sound whatsoever, and it flew right over us. And I remember looking at it, like, oh, that's really cool. I think that's a UFO. My friend was like, yeah, I think so. And some people next to us saw us looking up, was like, oh yeah, it's a UFO. And we went and started talking and kept walking. And then didn't take a single picture, had no inkling to take a single picture. I didn't see where it went. And it was like, at this time I was a MUFON, you know, knew enough to be like, I should have like stopped, taken pictures, taken a video, seen where it went at least. But I didn't do anything. It was just like, oh, yep, that's really nice, and go back to normal.
But you know what? Sometimes it's better just to take in the moment and actually enjoy the entire sighting than to miss a little bit of it by trying to look for your phone or a camera. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
You said you checked flight radar 24 and everything, and I wanted to ask you, have you like checked, I've been starting to check it, but I still don't know how to read it properly. MADAR unit. Have you ever looked into those when you have a sighting?
Yeah, we have two, well, one of them's down. We have three MADARs total around Nebraska. It's usually around the Omaha area. One's in Council Bluffs, and there's two in Omaha. And our state director has one, and there's another, and then I think our assistant state director has another, and I've considered getting one too, although I'm a little bit further out of town. And so we've looked at it a little bit, but I haven't like when I've had a case, I haven't like gone to the data. That's one that I haven't quite figured out how to look at that data, because I know it's available. You can go online and look at it.
Right. The information is like pressure, and like I don't know how to figure out if there's an abnormal hit, you know what I mean, or if it's tracking the same object for this amount of time, because it gives you the dates and the times and everything, so you can see if it's hitting something at that time, but you don't know whether or not the readings and the numbers are showing you something abnormal or not, you know.
Correct. Yeah, I know the people who have them will say, oh, my MADAR went off, and they'll see if they have a sighting around there, but I think that's been, at least for me, that's probably something I just need to look into more to learn how that works and how to interpret the data.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, I find that it's some of the cases when I look it up, it's perfect with the time and date. I just don't know if it's actually seeing that object or something strange, because I know they can't read normal aircraft. That's correct. They don't read the transmitters, airplanes, helicopters. It's other types of abnormality. Correct.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I would definitely like to do that, because I think it would help a lot. You know what I mean? I know in Pennsylvania, they're trying to start from one side of Pennsylvania to the other and have them going straight across so they can track objects.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to learning how to read it. So if there is a sighting, I know what I'm looking for, you know?
Yeah. Cause I think that's what we would like. Ours was just to triangulate it, but yeah, if you could track a craft going across, you know, a certain path, that would be
right.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So you, as your chief investigator now for the state of Nebraska, mm-hmm. And you're working on a high level case right now. Could you tell us about that? What it entails? What you're working on? What you guys found?
Sure. Yeah. So this is actually an older case. It happened in 2008, and it's in Jefferson County, Nebraska, and what it was is there was a gal that had basically a series of UFO sightings, and she's also had a lot of very strange and unusual things happen. And so she reported it to MUFON. I think she and her husband had both talked to the police about it, but they weren't that interested in it. And And from what the I talked to the investigators that did the actual investigation, and they said they really wanted to report it so that if something happened to them, like if they disappeared or something unusual happened, they would, everyone at least know what happened beforehand. That was kind of their reasoning that they wanted, and also they just wanted to tell someone who would believe them. And I guess it started when the gal had, she had seen a UFO. They live kind of out in the country. In a small, it's a small community area. And she had seen a UFO go over, and she kind of thought, you know, hey, you should come back. And I don't know if she had I can't remember if she had a light that she kind of shined at it too. And the craft stopped and turned back, started really? Going towards her again. And says ever since that point, then she's had a lot of activity. And like some of the stories, there's some paranormal stories, that I don't know the full details of those yet. But for the UFO parts and the more unusual parts, one of them was where she had chickens and ducks out on her farm, and she would put them in it. She had like a shed she'd put them in, you know, a coop she'd put them in at night, and it's completely sealed up. Nothing can get in or out. And so she went out one morning and, you know, to let them out, feed the chickens and the ducks, and opened the door, and the place is completely spotless clean. There's no chickens, there's no ducks, there's no feathers, there's no dirt on the floor. I mean, the place, there's no cobwebs, the place is spotless.
Wow.
And no idea. I think the only thing that was left was a half a chicken.
Really? It was like, yes. Mutilated?
Yes. Yeah, it was more just like I don't know if that, again, this is some of the details that I need to get more on, like if it was like a clean cut or if it was just like a half a chicken, you know, like what did it actually look like? I don't know if she took any pictures or not. But just the fact that it was spotless clean is, I mean, just ridiculous. It's like, no one would go and clean that, you know, cause it's right. it's a farm. And they did talk to the neighbors. There's some other farmers that live nearby. And apparently one of the farmers said that exact same thing happened to him like 20 years ago.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah. So that was interesting. And he said the only other thing they did find at one point is she found a foot of a chicken, just a foot. And like in the crook of a tree that was nearby.
In a tree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like in the Y's in a tree. Huh. She just happened to randomly find it. So, I mean, this is, again, it's not like an animal attack. I mean, the half a chicken would explain an animal attack, but nothing else does. I mean, it being clean like that. Yeah. And no feathers, no blood, no nothing. I mean, it's like someone went in and cleaned it, like spotless.
Yeah, I would definitely want to know if that was a clean cut or if it was just tore apart. That would
Yeah. Yeah, so I have a lot of those questions that either I don't have all the data, all the notes yet or anything. I've talked to the people that investigated it a couple of times now, and they're going to, they have a lot of their information on some computers. So I gave them a thumb drive and I'm going to look over some of that data. So that one was that was a very bizarre part of the case. I mean, the UFOs were common. She would see UFOs go across her field. It was very common sightings. In fact, when they were investigating it, they went down there two or three times investigating it. And one of the times they had stopped for lunch. And when they were coming out of the restaurant, they saw a UFO.
Wow. How about
and
that?
So they were all, I think there were three investigators and two of them were like, all three of them stopped and watched it. And then two of them ran back to the car to get the camera. And the other one just like, I'm just going to sit here and watch it. Because by the time they got back, it was gone. So
how far away does the neighbor live from the original lady that had this experience? Are they close together?
Yeah, they're fairly close. I think it's maybe a mile or two. I'd have to, again, that's kind of information I kind of want to look and see. But they're kind of in an area, but they're all farms, so they're not like real close. But they're at least, you know, a mile or two apart. So,
And is there any history with that area as well? Anybody looking to that?
Well, they found that history. The farmer also said that they've had calves go missing. That didn't make sense. They also said for their farm, they would have cows or calves that would die or go missing. And a lot of times they would find them. There was a water trough out in the field and they would just find them. They'd been killed. Now, they didn't seem to be mutilated, but it was just bizarre how they would be killed. And they would, you know, they couldn't figure out a reason how or why they were killed. So, but, you know, animals like that, I mean, it happens on a farm, but, you know, they think it's kind of unusual. It's a little different. And that happened to that one farmer with a calf. And it's, there is a thing in Nebraska. I don't know. I think it's kind of a Midwest thing because I think it's kind of common in Iowa and maybe like in, you know, South Dakota. I don't know about Kansas, but it's, I think there is a lot of UFO activity, but people don't talk about it. It's still kind of that taboo thing. Because when I talk to people about it, I mean, everyone I've talked to either has seen something they can't explain, or they know someone they trust that has seen something they can't explain. But we have very few cases in Nebraska. You know, we have, I think we have 2, 3, 4, and we have 5 investigators now, which is the highest we've had in a really long time. It was just 3 for a long time. So we have, you know, because we don't have a lot of cases though either. So again, there's just a lot of activity. People just don't report it. You know, one, they don't even talk about it with each other. So in that area, there could be a lot of activity, but we, you know, nothing that from the case when they talked about it, you know, no one reported it, but it could just be in not wanting to discuss it too.
So is there still like a stigma around there where people are kind of like weird that way, or is it just something that nobody talks about?
I think they would prefer not to talk about it. I mean, and also Nebraska is a very low population. You know, we don't have a lot of people in our state. Majority of the population is eastern Nebraska, you know, Omaha, Lincoln area. Once you hit out western Nebraska, it's very, I mean, there's more cows and, you know, just space out there. I actually drove, my brother does amateur cycling, and I drove him out for the brand, you know, bike ride across Nebraska, and it was clear out in Chadron. And so when on my way back, I remember driving through the sand hills, and I think I went for well over an hour. I didn't see a house. I didn't see a car. I didn't see a cow. I didn't see a person. I mean, it was almost, and I kind of like that personally because I'm, you know, a little more of an introvert, but it was almost creepy. It's like, I haven't seen anything for over an hour. It's like, it's just desolate out there. I mean, it's just mostly ranchland, you know, it's just sand hills. You can't grow anything. So it's all just ranchland. So there's a population thing, but there is also kind of that thing where you just don't talk about it. I think it is a little better in eastern Nebraska, but you know, it's just one of those things that it's if people can't easily explain it, they just prefer not to talk about it. You know, a lot of that, you don't want to cause waves. You don't want to, you know,
any attention.
Cause problems. Yeah. You don't want all that attention.
Now, do you guys have any like military bases there as well?
Yeah, we have the SAC Air Base is out by us. That's a major military base. We also have, because I think that's Strategic Air Command. So it's one of the areas I think they, I don't remember exactly. It's been a while since I learned about SAC, but they kind of handle a lot of the nuclear missiles. We have several nuclear missiles all over Nebraska. And it's one of the places where like the president would go if there is an attack of some kind. So it's a pretty significant military operation. You know, and that's right in Omaha. So, but there's also all kinds of, you know, missile silos and whatnot all over Nebraska too.
Huh. Do you guys, is there a lot of military activity out there? Do you guys see stuff happening, maneuvers, anything like that?
Not as much. You'll get some things, you'll get, you know, ships, you know, you'll have, like, you know, airplanes and, you know, some military craft, you know, coming and going from SAC, but, and you'll have a few things that will go across the state, but it's not like some of the places where you have like lots of military bases. That's our main one. And then we just have the silos around. So we don't have as much as maybe some other states.
Gotcha. Okay. So what is the do you guys have a next step or a game plan for the continuing the investigation at this location?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, right now it's kind of just me. I have an interest in it. It was actually one of the MUFON meetings I went to, they were talking about this case, and it was like, this case is interesting. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to become an investigator, because I kind of wanted to learn more, or at least put the data together. Okay. About this case, just to kind of see, because I think it's really interesting. Because there was the story has a few other parts too. There was a part where she was outside and she was on her driveway, and she was just watering the flowers and that next to the driveway. And there was like a bush, and the bush was kind of moved a little bit, like there was a rabbit or squirrel or something in it, or the dogs, I don't know, but it wasn't like scary. So she took the water, the hose, and just sprayed it. Sprayed water on it to scare whatever it was away. And this, like, from what she said, there was this huge screech that came out of the bushes, and this creature came out, and she described it as being about 4 to 5 feet tall. It had appeared to have like like wings. It was white. The wings look kind of like had like little holes, like lace in it. It's, you know, like that kind of pole, you know, you would see. And it was screaming at her, and she, of course, immediately screamed, and she ran towards the house, and it chased her, and she fell down in the driveway and kind of hit her head, and so then she was out. And so then one of her neighbors came by and saw her on the driveway, and so came and helped her up and get her back into the house, and she was fine, but she had a bite mark on her near her elbow.
Really?
Like on the inside of her elbow. Yeah. And so it was just really weird. I mean, you could see this bite mark, but it wasn't, you know, wasn't like a horrible bite mark. It was a small bite mark. And she said it had like this silver, it looked like mercury or something, like silver type of liquid in it. And so she took a sample of that and saved it. And then she was, of course, at that point, just terrified to leave the house. So
yeah, it would be too. I mean,
and they actually have a picture of it. And so there's a photograph where they saw it again. It's lifting up this pallet. And so that's one of the photographic evidence we have. You can see this, and of course, it's not crystal clear, but you can see this, it appears to be some type of creature. And you can see, like, it looks like hands because it was humanoid type shape, but it was short. And you can see it lifting up this pallet, this wooden pallet, and you can see the hands holding it up, you know, so it's like, I have no idea what that is. I don't think anyone does, but it's very unusual. So, and I don't know, I can see the gal had gotten very, very scared about, you know, just being out and about in her own area. And there were other instances, other things that were scary as well, I think, with just worrying about the UFOs. There was a lot of UFO activity, but between that, she was just very scared to leave the house. She was had a hard time sleeping at night, so it was very difficult for her too. But so there's, again, all this little unusual stories. That's probably the most, those two are probably the most significant things along with the UFO sightings. But yeah, it's interesting, and it's, I'm kind of curious too, is activity still continuing to this day or not? And I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's definitely a case of interest for sure. We have about a minute left, but we'll have to definitely have you back on once you guys do some work down there and let us know about the details. We'll have you back on and talk about it, because that sounds like a really good case you got on your hands there.
Okay. Yeah. No, sounds great. Yeah. It's there's so much to it. I mean, you can spend hours talking just about that. So.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. But I want to thank you for coming on today and sharing all this with us. I mean, you're doing some great work in Nebraska, and I think that's going to be a case to really look forward to diving in. I mean, I'd be excited to get down there myself, so I understand.
Yep. I'm excited to, if she's willing to talk to me, it's great. Otherwise, I'll just look around and we'll take it from there. So hopefully we'll learn something new, or at least just validate what we've already seen.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on and having a talk with us. I'm sure everybody loved the episode. The information was great. Some really cool cases you're working on. You're involved in some really neat stuff. We'll hopefully have you again on in the future. And by that time, maybe you'll have some more information for us.
Okay. No, that sounds great. I'll work on that.
Awesome. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to our episode 122 today. Remember, if you guys are interested in the 2024 Curiosities Festival, you can get all that information over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, I want to thank Tamara for coming on today and sharing that really cool information about that case she's working on. Some really weird things happening down there in that area, especially having it happen to not only the one lady that reported it, but also the neighbor a couple of 20 years prior to that, having the same thing happen with his animals on the farm. Mutilations, weird things being disappearing, that weird creature she described as well. And also the photo they have that she was talking about of this creature. So I'm looking forward to her going and getting some more information about that case, and having her back on the show to talk about it and see what she finds. So I want to thank Tamara again for coming on and sharing all that cool information with us. She's doing amazing work as the chief investigator for Nebraska MUFON. Guys, listen, the 2024 Curiosities Festival on May 4th is coming up, and it's coming fast. You can get tickets for $5 a person. We actually just added a really cool attraction to the festival. We're going to have an in-person planetarium there. I've personally been in this planetarium before. It's going to be run by astronomer Nick Placco, who is also a MUFON investigator. He is an astronomer. And six to eight people can fit inside this planetarium, and he'll be doing classes all throughout the day. That's included in the $5 for the entire day. It includes everything: the planetarium, the live speaker sessions. We're going to have three speakers. We're going to have live performances, live bands. There's going to be over 100 vendors there. All kinds of cool stuff happening, and it's all day for $5 a person, and we have packs of family packs for five. So check it out. All that information is over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Please come hang out with us again for the 2024 Curiosities Festival on May 4th. I hope to see you guys there, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to today's episode. We'll see you next week with another special guest, and until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky.